geometry to do with these spinners. So there's just a few conventions and stuff that we need to write down. You'll often see we've got two spinners, chi and psi. You'll often see this being written down without any indices, okay? And this is defined as chi and psi with indices like that, okay? And so if you use your rules for contravariant and covariant spinners, then this chi alpha with an index upstairs is just equal to that, and psi alpha with an index downstairs is equal to that. Okay, and then the product of these two epsilon tensors gives you minus Kronecker delta. Okay, so this is minus chi psi, where we have a northeast contraction of the indices. So actually, whether you contract the indices southeast or northeast matters, and it gives you a minus sign. Okay, so if you've got no bars on the spinners, then and no indices are written, then we have the southeast convention for undotted indices. And just to make life interesting for you, it's the opposite convention when we have dotted indices. So chi bar psi bar is defined as chi bar alpha dot psi bar alpha dot. If you write the indices explicitly, then you know, then that's fine, whichever way you write it. But if you see it without indices written, then there are those conventions, and that's the northeast convention. So you'll see the tutorial problems for today will have you messing about with spinners a lot. And so from now on, I'm going to be using the fact that in nature, spinners are Grassmann valued. Now, okay, so in other words, if I just move this chi gamma to the right hand side, then I get an additional minus sign, okay, the anticommute. So so if I do that, you get an additional minus sign, therefore a plus, and then we have the southeast convention summation. So this is just equal to psi chi. So when there's an implicit summation over the spinner indices, then you can just swap the order. Okay. And similarly, okay. So we've just shown that chi psi is psi chi, and similarly chi bar psi bar, if you go through the same thing with that, you'll find the same kind of thing. Now we can examine psi psi. Okay, this is equal to, remember it's the southeast convention. So if I write this in terms of only downstairs index objects, that's what we have. Now I'm going to put in the numbers for the epsilons. And and write out explicitly in terms of the components. But of course, these components anti-commute. So this is equal to 2 psi 2 psi 1, for instance. Or minus 2 psi 1 psi 2. So from this observation about psi 2 psi 1 and psi 1 psi 2, that with respect to psi psi, this means that we can write in general psi alpha psi beta is 1 half epsilon alpha beta psi psi. These objects anti-commute, so obviously psi 1 times psi 1 is 0, okay? Psi 2 times psi 2 is 0, and then the remaining possibilities are given here, and we can write it in terms of this. This is very useful for the exercises you'll be doing later, and also for manipulations of spinners. So you can use that actually to prove the following relation. So if we have products of spinners in that way, so implicitly, you know, that means Southey's convention summation. So you can use use this to give you that. Okay, so we have this with the spinners. The undotted indices are the left-handed SU2 indices. They're left-handed spinners, and the dotted indices are right-handed spinner indices. And as we showed before, when you take the complex conjugate, you swap left and right. So you swap a dotted for an undotted index. So if we take, say, well, let's just call it the emission conjugate. It's really complex conjugate, the operator. So complex conjugate or emission conjugate of a left-handed spinner gives us a right-handed spinner. And so we get an alpha dot instead and a bar on the top. Okay. If you want to know what it is in terms of the guy with the index downstairs, then we have that definition. So now we know how to take emission conjugates of products of contracted fields. So again, we have the Southeast convention. Permission conjugate reverses the order, of course, so we get psi alpha dagger chi alpha dagger psi bar alpha dot chi bar alpha dot. So another feature of the spinners is that all higher dimensional representations of the Lorentz group, so vectors, spin 3 halves, whatever, may be formed by products of spinners, maybe with some symmetry requirements. So we have two different kinds of spinners, a left and a right-handed one. And if you take products of them, you can get various different things. So there are some examples on the tutorial sheets today. That product, that direct product there, then of course we're just going to get some representation, which is a half, one half. And if we represent, actually writing that explicitly in terms of spinners, you'd write this thing just as psi alpha chi bar alpha dot. And if we want, spin one and the rest of two left, we can do this. Oops, cross. So we know how spins add up. Half plus a half, quantum mechanically, is going to give you a zero and a one. Right? So they can either add or subtract. So you get this combination. So, if you subtract a singlet piece from the product of two spinners, you can end up with a spin one under the SU2 left. Okay. So now I want to provide a connection with Dirac spinners just to make you feel at home, so that we can see in a context we've already seen how these two component spinners work. And actually, the gamma matrices, the 4x4 gamma matrices, can be written. So this is the Dirac matrices in the Weyl representation. It's important. So then in the Weyl rep, actually, they contain 2x2 sub-block matrices, which are these sigmas and sigma bars that we've introduced. Okay, and you can check that this, from the sigma relations, we get the Clifford algebra. And in the Weyl representation, gamma 5, which is I, gamma 1, gamma 0, gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 3, is has a minus 1 in the upper 2x2 block and a plus 1 in the lower hand one. And the eigenvalues of this thing, of course, plus or minus 1, and that gives you the chirality of the spinner that you're acting on it with. So we see some spinner with upstep that's got a zero in the last two entries and lives in the upper two components of this vector. We'll have an eigenvalue of minus one, and that's a left-handed spinner. So when we write our four component Dirac fields, we have the left-handed guy upstairs and a right-handed guy downstairs. Oh, sorry. This actually should be an upstairs index there. So the projection operators that we use to project out the left and right-handed states are just written in terms of 1 minus gamma 5 for the left-handed projection and 1 plus gamma 5 times a half for the right-handed guy. And of course, you can see then, when you act on this spinner, you just project out the, either the left-handed or the right-handed component. And then the Majorana spinner is defined by the fact that when written in Dirac notation, it's equal to its own charge conjugate. Okay? And if you work out what that means in terms of the two component spinners, so a Majorana spinner psi m just looks like psi alpha, and then we have the same guy complex conjugated in the right-handed part. So in four dimensions, I won't mention that. I'll just confuse things. Okay, good. So we managed to get through a bit of spinner stuff, and now I want to build up the supersymmetry algebra. After we've got the algebra, from that we can start building up the supersymmetric representations. So supersymmetry algebra differs from the algebras of Lie groups because it's graded. So normally you have commutation relations between two generators of a group. But for a graded algebra, you can sometimes have anti-commutation relations. So these are numerical constants. This is an operator. These are operators of, or generator of, the Lie algebra. And we're familiar with the case where eta a's are zero for the operators being bosonic. So if OA, or actually OR OB, is bosonic, then we have a zero. And if it's one for OA and AB being fermionic. So we have two different kinds of operators, fermionic ones and bosonic ones. And when you have two fermionic ones, there's an anti-commutation relation. So what we do actually is we extend the Poincaré algebra. Yeah. The what, sorry?
Second time in the left hand side is a BA.
Thank you. She got that. I forgot that one, mate. Okay, so with Poincaré generators, you'll notice that we always have minor signs. We have bosonic generators. P mu and M mu nu. But now, in SUSY, we add to these fermionic generators. Q alpha A and Q bar alpha dot A, where A goes from 1 to big N, and so N is the number of supersymmetries. So in phenomenology you tend to just discuss N equals 1, but in string theory and ADS, CFT and so on, you discuss N is 4 or 8 or something. So we want to extend the Poincaré algebra with some extra graded algebra involving these Qs. So we already know M mu nu and M rho sigma and P mu. And we also know P mu and M rho sigma from the Poincaré algebra that we discussed last time. But there's a load of other ones that we need now. So, first one we need, actually we're going to derive in a minute, is the commutator. Remember, because the Q alpha is a fermionic generator, but M mu nu is bosonic, so they have a commutator. We'll be able to derive that. And from that, we can make deduction about the form of Q alpha and P mu. We'll need the anticommutator between two Qs. We'll need the anticommutator between Q and Q bar. And we'll also consider the commutator between some internal symmetry generator, like say hypercharge or something, a U1 generator, and Q alpha. And we also really need all of these relations with Q and Q bar swapped. Once we've got all of those, then we'll have the algebra of supersymmetry. So actually we can work out how the first one, because we know Q alpha is a spinner. So since Q alpha is a spinner, we know how it transforms. Under Lorentz transformation as So it just goes with our two-dimensional representation with sigma mu nu. Okay, so we're going to work infinitesimally. Because that's sufficient to work out the algebra. But we also know that Q alpha is a field operator. Transforming under the Lorentz transformations. So we can sandwich it between states in some Green's function and transform the states under the Lorentz transformation. And we should get the same thing. So Q alpha primed is so for Lorentz transformation on the state so the state now has some generic representation then Q alpha primed is u dagger q alpha and u. So again, we just did look locally. And we throw away quadratic terms, actually. So we just equate these two right-hand sides. So there's a couple of lines of algebra. And it tells us what our commutator is. As you can see that in this term we'll get an m mu nu times q times 1 with a plus, and there's another term which goes q times m mu nu with a minus. And since we can vary these, they're anti-symmetric, these only give me nu's, but we, aside from that, we can vary them how we want. So when we multiply this whole thing by only mu nu, it's got to be true in general. Okay, so this, we can also consider how Q bar transforms, and we'll just get the same thing. Pretty much. This is an associated minus sign. If you write it like that. Okay, so that's fine. We know now the first commutation relation. And we know that because we know that Q alpha is a spinner. We know how it transforms under Lorentz transformations. We don't know how, at the moment, what it's going to do when we translate it. So we don't know how it's this second commutator. So we have to guess a form for it. Okay, so we want the right-hand side of this should have an it should have the right indices. Let's write it like that. So it should, in order to transform like the left-hand side under a Lorentz transformation, the right-hand side has got to have an index mu, and it's got to have a free index alpha. And so sigma mu alpha alpha dot times q bar alpha dot is the only thing with correct indices the correct index structure linear in Q, in the Qs. And of course, we can multiply it by some constant. So we're now guessing the form of the rest, and we're going to see whether it's consistent. So now, since we can take the Hermitian conjugate of this thing and get q sigma mu with an alpha dot. Remember, sigmas are made of the identity and Pauli matrices. All of those matrices are Hermitian. So each sigma mu itself is Hermitian. So if we take the Hermitian conjugate of our relation star dagger implies that p bar beta dot p mu is c star. Sorry, there should be a bar there as well. Okay, so that's right. Okay, good. So you get the bars from some epsilon symbols that come in. Okay, so now we take the Jacobi identity. Have you seen the Jacobi identity yet? Yes, good. So you take it between commutators of P mu and P mu and Q. Okay, this commutator is zero from the Poincaré algebra, and the other two commutators we know from star. Right, and then we use double star. Now, sigma nu alpha alpha dot sigma bar nu alpha dot beta u beta minus c squared sigma mu alpha alpha dot okay. So this thing is just mod c squared times sigma nu, sigma bar mu, minus sigma nu, sigma bar nu, times q beta. Alright. This thing in the brackets, you can calculate it explicitly because we know what the sigmas are. That's non-zero in general. And so, C must be zero for this Jacobi identity to be correct. Sorry? So, yeah, so this commutator is zero. Yep, to get zero. But it's good. I mean, if there's a commutator that's zero, it makes life easier in the long run. Well, I don't think so. I mean, the point of going through this is that we don't really know how these spinner generation, at the moment we don't know how they, whether they, you know, you do a spinner transformation that it translates something. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think you can. Sorry? That we know it, how do we interpret it? Well, we'll use it a bit in a bit on some supersymmetric states, and actually we'll use this to derive the fact that actually q alpha is the square root of a translation. So if you do two q's, you get a translation. Okay, but so at the moment we're just doing the algebra. We'll get to the physical interpretation later. Yeah.
Is there an equivalence in graded algebras of a fermionic Jacobi identity as well?
I suppose so. Actually, I never thought of that. It wouldn't surprise me if there are.
Yeah, Wikipedia seems to have like one Jacobi identity that applies to both fermions.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, okay, this one's just the bosonic version because we've got p mu's in there. But so we've derived that one, and actually, you know, you can take the Hermitian conjugate, and you'll get q bar alpha is also commutes with p mu. So okay, what this means? All right, so physically, we can take some state. All right. So to talk more about your question. So we take a state, right? We do a q on it, the q first, and then we translate it somewhere. And the order, whether you do the translation or the spinner operation, doesn't matter. Okay, that's what it's telling you. So order doesn't matter. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's not, well, okay, you need to do a bit more work, right? But we'll see that coming up when we look at the states. Okay, so let's consider the anti-commutator now of two Qs. Again, we need something which just has an alpha and a beta on the right-hand side. So we have some constant k times sigma mu nu, which has the right indices, alpha and beta, times m mu nu. So it has to be, these things are Grassmann valued, okay, so it has to be anti-symmetric in alpha and beta. And these sigma mu nu's are anti-symmetric in alpha and beta, so that's why we have that. So the left-hand side, if we now take the commutator with p mu nu, sorry, with p mu, this left-hand side, you know, we can commute the p's through the q's. So we should get zero for that commutator, but this m mu nu doesn't commute with p mu from the Poincaré algebra. So that gives you that k is zero. So the q's anti-commute with each other. And now we can multiply by an epsilon tensor and get that get that they anti-commute. And it's the same with the barred fields, the barred operators as well. Okay, and then we've only got two more to do now. We have the anticommutator with a Q and a Q bar. Okay, so we have an object, sigma mu, which has an alpha and a beta dot index. And so we need to soak up this mu here. And so we have this vector operator p mu to do that. And so we have some constant in front t. So this right-hand side again, it's by the index structure. I mean, if I start writing in, I can write terms with p squareds in, okay, but that's just p squared is some constant that we get absorbed into a constant. Okay, so actually what happens is, so really these q's are normalized by this anticommutator. So t sets the normalization. And t is 2 is fixed by convention. So now we see q alpha and q bar beta dot is 2 sigma mu p mu. So this is relates to what I was saying. If you do two Suzy transformations, one with a Q and one with a Q bar, you get a translation. Okay, so this is why sometimes people say Suzy is the square root of a translation. It's a bit imprecise, but anyway, you'll hear people say that. So, of course, the idea of having these fermionic generators is that if we have some bosonic state, B, then, you know, Q alpha acting on B is going to be some fermionic state. Okay, so we want to transform bosons into fermions, and vice versa. Bosonic state, okay. And with the bars as well, and dots. And so, you know, if we imagine acting on some bosonic state at x with a QQ bar, some QQ bar operator, okay. Then we're going to use this with some indices. We'll use this anti-commutation relation, and you know, you'll get to a bosonic state that's moved. Because we know that the P mu does the moving. So I think we've got time to just talk about the last bit of the algebra. Which is commutator of Q alpha with some internal symmetry operator. So actually, usually this vanishes. So usually it's zero. But there's an exception. And actually, so the reason it vanishes is because we usually take Susie cross some internal symmetry as the overall symmetry of the theory. And this cross really means that it commutes with all the generators of the internal symmetry. But there's a special case for U1 symmetries because there's an automorphism. That's okay, so an automorphism is a one-to-one map of stuff to itself. Okay, so there's an automorphism known as R symmetry. So if we do a U1 transformation on the Qs and the opposite one on the Q bars, so we do that map, and if R is some generator of the U1 symmetry, i.e. Q alpha goes to e to the I times some group parameter alpha, let's call it gamma, R Q alpha e to the minus I gamma R. So the fact that Q alpha is a field operator and U1 is a symmetry of the theory gives us this. Then, you know, you can equate these two right-hand sides and at lowest order, and that will give us that Q sorry, I should put gammas here. Q alpha with this Arv generator gives us Q alpha because of the automorphism. And I'm sorry, the minus there. Because of the complex conjugate, you get a minus. Okay, so this R symmetry does not commute with... Okay, so all the internal symmetries actually do commute with Susie. But there's this R symmetry, this U1, which doesn't commute with Susie. In fact, it can be kind of considered to be within it. Yeah.
Is it the U1
of
H3 cross?
No. This is a different...
It's the new U1 that you're introducing.
Yeah, it's the new U1, yeah. And it's... Yeah. And it's the U1 of this automorphism, really. So it's a global, at the moment it's global U1. And I didn't introduce it very well. So we imagine that we transform the Qs like this, okay? And because Q alpha is a field operator, we can consider this U1 operator acting on the states. That gives us also that Q must transform in this way. And then we derive the commutation relations for Q.
Okay, so you are introducing a new symmetry that acts on the
fields. Yeah, I guess that's right, because that's where you get this from. Yeah. It's U1. Okay, right, that's good. So, we've derived the algebra now. Next time, we'll talk a bit more about Poincaré representations, because what we want to do is actually answer your question more and see what these commutators mean for the supersymmetric when you act on supersymmetric states. But in order to answer that question, we need to know how the Poincaré operators act. And it'd be mainly to do with spin. We want to see, this is a heuristic picture, but we want to see in detail actually how these operators affect the spin of the states that you're acting on them with. Okay. So that's it for today. Yep.
A little bit like the raising and lowering operators of SU2 or the harmonic oscillator. Is there any connection?
I don't think so directly. Actually, if you go to, I should mention, at some stage I switched to n=1, right? In fact, all of today's lecture was in n=1. So you'll notice, I should have mentioned that. You can have indices on these Qs, right? But so the rest of the lecture was n=1. And in n=2, I mean, you can get, in fact, instead of just U1, you can get SU2 then. But I don't think there's a particular relation to the raising and lowering operators. It's just a U1 symmetry in the Susie unit. Yeah, it's an automorphism of the group.